integral and yeah, over the distribution function. But that's so let's get us started. So who wants to start kick off problem? Well, the part A of problem one.
Well, I can do A and B of one and A of B of two with others of recommendations around that.
Yeah. I have done just number one.
You've just done number
I haven't done question number two and question number three.
I have done two.
You have done two? Yeah. So.
How
about one? Have you done one? No, I haven't. Okay, so Sharon. Anybody has just.
I thought
look at three, or. Nobody has looked at three, no?
Not
no, okay. So then that's out of the picture, so. So Brian, why didn't you get started problem one, and we'll see how far down it can go.
Yeah. You have the, yeah, can I read the question for us?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
And if you have chalk, then your chalk.
Okay, boiled down, question A asks us, first of all, consider an early epoch of the universe when it's populated by many different species of particles. Given distribution function, FA, position, momentum, time, determine the conditions under which we can assume these particles are going to be in statistical equilibrium with both the other species of particles, or even the equilibrium with itself, and in equilibrium with radiation. And then A goes on to ask us, should the temperature be the same for all species and focus? Okay. So this question, not so much to write on the board, so just everyone words. Okay. Now, over time, you can imagine that these particles are going to be interacting with various forces. Probably the most predominant will be electromagnetism. They could also, in a larger scale, they'll interact with gravity, but that doesn't really affect what we're worrying about here. We could also, depending on how dense they are, add in the nuclear forces. But the important thing is that we can characterize the overall rate of interactions in some part of the universe by some function, let's call it gamma t, which is interactions per time. Now, also characterizing the universe at this time is the Hubble expansion factor, which gives, roughly speaking, relative separation. Also per time.
So what is that relative separation?
Yeah, that's just a way of thinking it is it's A dot over A. So like if Hubble is 1.2 per second, then in 1 second, particles that were a meter apart are now 1.2 meters apart. So now, if Hubble expansion is, much greater than this rate of interactions, then particles will be pulled apart faster than they can interact with each other and share information and come to equilibrium. Conversely, if we have a high gamma and low H, which means the universe isn't expanding too quickly. Particles have time to interact, and they can eventually come to equilibrium. So one condition is that gamma of t is much greater than h, because it takes more than simply one interaction on average to come to equilibrium and pace a bunch. So this condition will show that the particles are having many interactions before Hubble pulls them apart. Now,
Is there an expression for gamma?
Yeah, I'm just looking at it in my paper. Here. Where did I write it? Okay. Now, we can express gamma as being approximately the number density of the particles times the expectation value of the cross-sectional area times the velocity. Now, the cross-sectional area depends on the energy of the particle, which in turn depends on velocity. And in theory, we can calculate this, but it's going to be different for every species. So I didn't bother. And the velocity, in the end, the important thing is this is going to be some function of the temperature of the particle. So our condition for the particles to be in equilibrium will also depend on the cross-section, which will be the cross-section for interaction, which depends on the two species of particles. If it's just one particle with itself, then we only need to worry about, I believe we only need to worry about the larger cross-section, but we didn't get into that. For a particle with itself,
But there are several interactions, so you have interaction with particle itself or with other species, the same species or the other species.
Yeah, I'm just trying to read in my mind which cross-section we use when it's interacting with another species, and I believe we use whichever cross-section is larger.
But for any interaction, there is a specific cross-section. So you're adding...
So this is the cross-section of the interaction. Now we can further characterize this by gamma AB, where A is one species and B is the other species.
So the question is, what is N? Is it density of...
Number density.
Of which particle?
Perhaps it should be... let's just do NA and B.
Oh, but then that doesn't have the right dimensions.
Maybe it's square root of NA and B.
Well, X, what do you think?
The photons?
Well,
yeah, because
it could be, but...
Yeah, shouldn't the interaction reach scale with the square of the density?
It could be just like gamma AB equals NA and gamma BA equals NB.
That's almost true. That's right, basically. So the question is, so you have one particle that's moving in the universe, let's say particle A. And we want to see how often it sees it collides with particle B.
Okay.
And that's going to be proportional to the number of big particles.
So then we'll just say it's just proportional to. And this is the interaction rate for one particle.
Exactly.
Okay. And then if we have many particles of A, the total interaction rate or interaction density will add in a factor of A.
So that would be different. That would be interaction density, not the interaction rate. So basically, the number of interaction per unit volume. But this is the right thing to compare to H, because both are rates. One is rate of expansion.
Yeah.
how fast density drops, and the other is the rate of interaction, which is how fast the particle sees other particles, how often the particle sees other particles. So that's good.
Okay, now the question also asks us, will they be in equilibrium with photons? And I don't know really for this part, but it basically depends on the interaction rate with photons, which in this format we can characterize just as another particle with, you can have a cross-sectional area of anything in their interaction with photons. Now, the trick is not all particles necessarily couple to photons. Most we know of and we probably be concerned with do all types of leptons and fermions. Now, thus we have like electrons, protons, and neutrons, which make most of visible matter will couple to photons. Thing is, if we get to more exotic types of matter, like dark matter, that may not couple to photons. We don't know at this point. So the condition that couples to photons is, first of all, the rate for interacting with photons still has to be much greater than h, and also the condition that this particle will either interact with photons or interact indirectly, that it can interact with another particle, which couples strongly with photons, and then it'll eventually come to equilibrium.
So all of those will be in that sigma, would be included in that sigma. So if there is an interaction, that means there's a large sigma. If there is no interaction, that means there's a small sigma. So the cross section describes all we need about interaction.
Right.
So I guess for interaction with photons, that NB should be number of photons. I guess that's really, which is an obvious point, I think. I guess there's not really much else.
But I'll also ask about the temperature. Mm-hmm. And the temperature is essentially the same as thermodynamic or equilibrium, in that if they're in equilibrium, they're by definition at the same temperature.
Good. Good. So I guess but another way of seeing, so this is a bit heuristic that the gamma larger is smaller than h. A more explicit way of saying this is just the total number of interactions. So this is interaction per unit time. The total number of interactions is integral of gamma dt, if you want to just count it. And so if it turns out that usually gamma falls off with time, so this integral is usually finite. For example, if gamma goes as density goes as 1/t², for example. But the point is that so basically the number of interactions within a Hubble time is just going to be a Hubble time. It's just going to be t times gamma roughly, which is h inverse times gamma. So if you want to have many interactions per Hubble time, this should be large. And you see what I'm saying? So because Hubble time is h inverse, so that h inverse like times gamma.
Yeah.
Oh.
You mean that times gamma?
No, I think that's gamma divided by h. So I'm not sure what you're thinking there.
H.
No, I meant edge inverse.
Oh,
so
inverse.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So that's because time is basically h is 1/time dimensionally. In fact, actually, for any cosmology, h is the constant divided by time and numerical factor. So that if this is larger than 1, because you have many interactions per Hubble. That's the simple part. So perfect. So the next second part, what does it ask you to do? And I'm sorry. So let me just. So what I was telling you, gamma usually falls off with time fast. So at some point, this breaks down. So usually early on, density is high, so you have thermal equilibrium. But at late time, since density falls off, usually gamma falls off faster than H does. And I mean, you can just see that, for example, N falls off as 1 over T squared in usually, because N goes as density goes as H squared. But right-hand side is H. So usually, left-hand side, gamma falls off faster. So at early times, you're in thermal equilibrium, and late times, you decouple, basically. Everything at late times decouple. And it's just because universe is too dilute, so nothing's easy. Okay, good. So the next part is?
Next part, B asks, express the density of particles and energy density, rho, and pressure, P, as integrals over the distribution function at the use of expressions. Show that this equation and argue that S in this equation can be interpreted as the energy density or entropy density of the universe.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Where is the dependent on that? In the concentration F, right? And where at V or where?
So it depends on time.
Yeah. Where it's
here. In gamma.
In gamma. So
it could be in all terms. It could be in N, it could be in sigma V. Because sigma V, as Brian mentioned, depends on temperature, which also falls off as universe expands. So
yeah, it'd probably be in both things.
And V
also falls off.
V also falls off.
Well,
yeah.
It depends. I mean, I guess for relativistic particles, it doesn't. It's just a speed of light. For non-relativistic,
mm-hmm.
say for photons, it's always C. But for non-relativistic particles, that also falls off. Yeah.
So and the reason for falling off the concentration is just expansion of the universe. Yeah.
Given density.
Yeah, density.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So for part B, finding N rho and P, first of all, we start off with the distribution function. It gives us in the last part.
Okay. Our expression for that.
Number. Yeah, I'm looking at the distribution
mm-hmm.
function. Okay. The distribution function we have is F of K, where we're using K as momentum, so I don't get confused with pressure. Okay, this is just in the end a Boltzmann distribution of the energies of the particles where M is the particle mass, U is the chemical potential, T is the temperature, and G is the spin degeneracy. And this will give the distribution of particles that are at a particular
momentum, or E.
So this is momentum converted to energy here. I had it earlier.
That prefacto is, I'm not sure where that where you put that. Because
yeah,
F,
I can't remember, I didn't have that. It was 2 pi cubed. It comes from the conversion, I believe, between, well, let's just, the one they gave us, the distribution function for an ideal gas as given problem one. I'll just keep it those variables.
So, okay, so that's the difference, huh? So you converted from these p cubed k to de.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's very different. Because in terms of just in momentum space, there is no numerator. Numerator is constant, that's g divided by the way. Right? So those three factors are just d3 cubed, d3k by de.
And then so the vector at did the conversion, just change variables from p to k so we don't get fixed pressure later, and converted the right side to energy instead of being integral of momentum. And when we convert from three dimensional derivative over here, we knock out some of these 2 pi's.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also getting rid of subscripts of A and E, depending on P, we'll calculate that as next. Okay. So with this as our distribution function, we can calculate whatever value we want, like number density, momentum, or pressure, by taking various moments of this. So what we do is start off. The simplest moment is for number density. So n is simply the integral of the density function for all k. Just an output, plus or minus 1 depends on whether we're working with bosons or fermions, as they have different distribution functions.
So which one is which?
Plus is for fermions, minus for bosons.
So this is basically the Pauli exclusion principle that
yeah.
A fermion, this never exceeds 1, basically. So if you forget about those factors of g over 2 pi cubed, there is a maximum because
yeah.
The exponential is always larger than 0. So if there is a plus 1, the phase space density has a maximum of 1, basically. Or if you add g there, then a maximum of g, depending on how many spin from you have. But for bosons, there is no limit. You could have infinite number.
And it just asks us to express it in an integral, not solve it. So we'll go on next.
So you have an extra E here compared to the other.
Yeah, I just forgot to write it down. Okay. Next simplest element is the density, which is the moment of energy times the distribution function. It's just the same thing, we've got an extra factor of E in there. And finally, it is for the pressure. Now, to figure out the pressure, this is in fact the moment of 1/3 momentum squared over energy. Now, the way this comes out is just the calculation of, if you assume like we enclose all of these particles within some box, and as they're moving through, they'll hit the edges of the box, or sides of the box periodically, and bounce off. We can calculate the rate of hitting the size or interactions with it per time. It depends on the velocity. Which we can get from K over E factor, and then the force they add to the size depends on K, which so we've got K squared over E, and I'm just using this to say the magnitude of K squared. If we're using as a vector, we do K dot K, or in any case. And 1/3 is simply because we're in three dimensions, and it has to, it's kind of the average of the angles it would hit with the sides when they make that interaction. So putting all this together, that just gives us a typical pressure at a momentum. So we take the moment of that for all momentums, and multiplying things out.
Does everybody agree with this formula, or?
I found it another way. I wrote the stress energy tensor. And in that tensor, if we just diagonalize the tensor with a pressure on the diagonal, but if we write the stress energy tensor in terms of velocities, we'll have ux squared, uy squared, and uz squared. And then the traces should be equal, because the trace doesn't change on the transformation.
So what is the energy momentum tensor in terms of this?
Stress energy.
So how do you write it down in terms of?
If it's just in terms of pressure, it will have pressure diagonally, and then.
But in terms of distribution, how is
it? Fluid, right? Yeah.
So which is more magnetic, wouldn't be for radiation.
Well,
but
it doesn't, it can be, it cannot, but the point is, but if something is homogeneous, you can always treat it as a perfect fluid, and this is just by symmetry, and it turns out, so at thermodynamic equilibrium, everything is a perfect fluid. So that's the one side. Can I actually write this down? So sorry, Brian, I just wanted to see what this other derivation is.
I guess,
well,
you can use another board.
Yeah. If it's diagonal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. this is, but if you just write, find the same stress energy tensor for a system of particles that
okay.
have different velocities,
mm-hmm.
and we don't look at the pressure now, we'll have something like this.
But so is that all you have? And you have some prefactors probably.
I guess I have rho.
But that doesn't give you this.
The trace, because we might want to we make a coordinate transformation, and under that transformation, the trace should be the same.
Mm-hmm.
So 3p will be equal to v squared, and we have rho here. So if I want to write it in a relativistic way, this will be gamma. Because we here also we have we should have something here, but well, it's, I write m over m.
Is that the right answer? I guess it is, isn't it? Because gamma, you can multiply and divide by gamma, right? And mv gamma is just momentum, right? So that's just momentum squared divided by m gamma, which is energy. So I guess that is the right formula. So in general, I mean, this is, so in a relativistic sense, so if you remember what we discussed, so for a perfect fluid, the energy momentum tensor looks like this, so that's the left-hand side. The right-hand side, if you have a bunch of particles, it's going to be an integral over the, it's going to be an integral over the distribution function. So it's going to be d3k or d3p of, let's say, d3k from k. And then we need to make a tensor out of this. So it must have u nu. And what else? I think that's just it. I think there is something else that should make this relativistically invariant. I think there is 1 over energy. There is a 1 over energy here. So that. Yeah, I think there is a 1 over energy here that makes this relativistic thing. Because. I don't remember why this comes in exactly, but to make this combination d3k relativistically invariant, you have to divide it by energy. And then this is a way, if you look at just the diagonal part of it, or the spatial part of the left hand side, you can take it out, basically do what the refractor is. But this is the relativistic way of it. Okay, so Brian. Thank you, Robert.
Finishing out writing K
the pressure equation as this has become important. Leave that as a reference. Next part of this asks us to derive an equation at the end which says the equation we want to derive is showing that
I think one of the E's in there is in your last line. It's redundant. So I think the E cancel, right? Because you're dividing by E.
Yeah. We've got a K squared adds in this plus, and yeah. Where what we have on the left defines S as being 1 over T times 0 plus P minus mu. Mm-hmm. All right, that's what we're going for. Okay, in getting there, first thing I did was we take the equation for pressure and differentiate it with respect to T. When we get there, it's a bit complicated, but, skipping the specific steps of differentiation is the result. Okay. And to get rid of the
That's F squared. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. We can get rid of the F squared term through substitution if we go back to what we originally had for F of K, which is we take the original F to differentiate that with respect to K. Okay, we get solve this for vf squared of k and substitute it back, getting at this point, we simply have an integral over df, which none of the rest of this directly depends on. So we just, after converting the limits to df and taking the value, we integrate over f. And making some substitutions and up that the various factors that come out match up with our moments, giving us the result that after a lot of simplification, as we showed in a past assignment, we have the continuity equation. Zero. And if we solve for dT, then divide by d temperature. Get this value, which we can substitute in to the left side there, getting the result.
So I'm a bit confused. How did you get that dp by dt?
Take this and
that looks more like d rho by d.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, this is p or rho, this other one. But, okay, but that's d rho by dt. And I guess that's a minus minus. Wow.
Yeah.
It's,
okay. Yeah, I think I skipped some steps in showing that when you extend that out, but. Meant to get dp.
So this one you show is dp by dp. Okay, so why don't you expand to us what where you're going to go next or where?
Yeah, I'll show. Okay. And it works if it's dp, dt, is then just plug it into the left side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And yeah, I wrote this out in the text, so I skipped some steps that possibly shouldn't have. Is it such a pain to write?
Yeah. I think your LaTeX assignments are specifically brief.
Okay, this is the result we get after some more step skipping and substitution.
Really? So you that's where you're running it, of course, but it's confused how you can get there from. But can we actually just find that expression, rho plus p minus n mu? Maybe that just shows that if we do that, we see.
Did you do the integration
by
function?
Oh,
yeah, that's good. There is, we should do an integration by function.
I think it's mentioned it, and that.
Okay, yeah, here it is. It's in performing this derivative is what I left off, which says we get differentiating that we get a minus sign, this g cancels out, so it's minus n mu over g. We have a common factor of dt we should pull out, so on the inside we get rho plus p minus n mu. And then we do rho. So
I think this is B. This is a great
it's an integration by parts I performed there. Which
where does that come from?
This does derive from this equation. If you do an integration, if you take the integral, do an integration by parts that remove the integral, you can get a dp term.
Okay. I think I see that. Okay. Good. Okay. So the.
And then let's just shove this part over here.
That's okay. So that now I see that. But then what happens to your substitute that?
Substitute. Okay, we can substitute that in for d rho dt or dp in there, multiply by both sides by a cubed, and then just writing this out, this gives us. Now.
Where did that come from, actually, this rho plus p minus n mu divided by p?
That comes from here. We just performed this differentiation with respect to t that gives it, that gives us.
I guess you mean this constant. Okay.
And
that's fine. Okay. And then?
And then over here, we, I believe we.
Yeah, I think the rest would work out. Yeah, because you can combine that t, take the inside the derivative basically, right? Because so you have two terms.
Yeah, I think it's another iteration by parts.
Yeah.
Will change it from the dt to getting this DNA.
Good. So the thing that's a bit disconcerting for me is that equation, the continuity equation, that doesn't generally hold. That holds, I think, only when entropy is concerned.
Okay.
Which
that
is,
might be why we're having some trouble here.
Careful. I think it has a better power than it was. Yes, I.
The fact that we have defined entropy that way, this quantity should be conserved, but whether it is entropy or not, that's another question.
Well, that's part of what it asks us to show. But in fact, this part didn't. I kind of worry about using the continuity equation that way, except things seem to work out. But anyways, we define entropy that way. Let's just go on with that now. Okay. Okay. Now, first of all, let's make an assumption that either in cases we're doing number density times AQ is in most cases going to be roughly constant because for except for highly relativistic matter of radiation and it's proportional to a to the negative 3. So if that's constant, then we'll get 0. Or in those cases the chemical energy is going to be much less than the temperature. So if which would be the case if the particles are relativistic. So what we have on the right side will be approximately equal to 0. And as we wrote out before, this and we've got S is defined as and in the case where S is constant, this last part vanished. So got the T, and so we just got in this simplified case S. It's simply T. Now, we put that in to.
So why did you ignore mu?
Because in this case, if the number density is constant, or let's see, we're working with a case where one of two cases, either mu is much less than t, in which case that term vanishes trivially, or we've got na cubed being constant, which if we are to assume that's constant, then that derivative is also constant and
the sound. But what is it that you want to show exactly?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if we plug in entropy like that, we get the result.
I don't
understand what is that entropy.
Yeah, so let's see.
We don't know what's entropy yet. We're just calling it X.
Oh.
So that gives us the result. Okay. Now we can treat A cubed as being like the volume, which works better if we add in an initial volume times A. So if we just go straight from here, substitute the volume for A, this gives us. Now, rho times the volume, as we noticed before, is just the total energy. Mm-hmm. And if we say S, if S is entropy density, we use big S as smallest times the volume, leading to. Which is exactly the equation for entropy and thermodynamics. So, now the reason this is entropy is, well, that's how entropy is defined. It's entropy isn't a clear concept, like something as easy as volume or density, but it's defined as there are ways of looking at it, like the degree of disorder in the system, or looking at the change in total energy as being change in energy, loss pressure times change in volume, divided by temperature. And since it follows the equation for entropy, it is entropy.
The only loophole is that you ignored mu in the derivation, which is
Yeah, I dropped that out. Well, it's the minus n mu part, which
and so what happened to temperature? So there was a temperature in the denominator, right? What happened to that?
At what point is it missing?
Right. So that line, the first line, lower, this one. Yes, so there's a temperature in the denominator, and limit you differentiating.
That's within the derivative.
Yes.
If we do the derivative with respect to temperature, that becomes a t squared denominator. We've got the t out here, and then divided by t here.
Okay, that's, and there's a minus sign, right, or no? I'm wondering what happens to that first term, the term that has dt, where does it go?
Lost into the black hole that is my latent
skills. So how about the other term? So other terms, do you understand the other? So the first term is just the differentiation.
Looking at this, I think you've got this dx1 ddt over t. This is, I believe, an integration by parts here gets rid of that, because then we have the 1 over t times t, which is, we multiply this by a factor of 1, and then a cubed dp comes out of that.
It's a bit curious. I don't see where you start with something as symmetric in rho and p, and some you end up with something as not symmetric in rho and p. So there's something missing there. It cannot be.
The differentiation doesn't work.
Doesn't work to be right. Yeah, I don't know. It's a bit curious. Yeah, I mean, I agree that you should end up with that equation with entropy. DTS should go at the first.
It could be that two wrongs I somehow fudged in my mind to make it right in starting with the continuity equation at some point.
Did anybody else have a better idea about what's going on there? No? You didn't do it?
I didn't do it.
Then how about you, Farber?
I did. I'm thinking of what I did.
Thank you, Brian.
I remember what I did.
So, let's see. So,
just a sec.
Okay.
Just a second. Really long second.
Okay.
We have used something else there. It's the relation of dp to dt there. Dp to dt, the last one.
Yes.
It's rho plus p over t. And we have neglected mu. Okay.
You have neglected mu. Like when you said v, I don't know who that.
Yes, because everyone does this. It's very strange for me. Even Weinberg in his cosmology book neglects mu in the first step.
Neglects mu. But But I mean, you can say mu is zero equally at some for some system, and so
there we use that relation to there is dp to dt is rho plus p over t. If we use that relation there, it becomes correct.
Can you write it down?
No.
It's kayak as long as you don't write it.
You have to imagine.
Okay. Yeah. It's like quantum mechanics. If you look at the equations, they'll make no sense.
We have defined S to be P plus rho over T. If we take this,
okay.
Is this okay?
That's fine, yeah.
Okay. So, I make use of this here.
And you go mu.
Yes. Bt is approximately equal to rho plus t over t.
Okay. Now that makes sense.
So now this comes dp over dt.
The whole thing becomes dp a cubed?
This part.
I see.
P plus rho on the t is dp over dt.
So as long as you ignore mu, then everything works out.
It's the justification for ignoring mu, which is also, I mean, in one of the conditions we're given that mu is much less than t, sure, that makes sense. That part
is that the condition that you're given?
We argue that given that from the left side of the equation, we'll have either d na cubed is constant, that is, the particles are non-relativistic, and so.
It's constant.
Okay. Yeah. Or in the case where DNA cubed isn't constant, in that case we must have the temperature much, much higher than the chemical potential.
Yeah. Why?
In that case, let's see, when it isn't constant, we have radiation or something.
Okay, so let's figure something out. So mu, it doesn't need to be there. The only reason that mu is there is that if you don't create an analytic particle, so if the number of particles are for whatever reason constant in your system, then there's a mu that you introduce to ensure that. So this is
which would be the case for radiation.
It kind of that's the case. For radiation, you can always generate photons, and most of the time you can create photons and destroy them. So things that photons can be absorbed or emitted. For radiation, that's what almost all the time in cosmology, mu is zero for radiation. And then if you have black body, for example, there is no. But then, if you have fermion bosons, any massive particle, these are low temperatures that they, you don't create or analyze them. So there is a mu there that ensures the numbers.
Okay, so it's in the case that for radiation, we have mu equals zero. For massive particles, we have dNA cubed equals zero.
But that can be true for all particles. But yes, okay, I see. Well, the idea is that if this is not necessary, it's not necessary to ignore this term to be able to prove that this is interesting. But then the thing is that there is also another term in this TDS equation. If there is a mu, and that's, I think it's something like mu dn. So if mu is not zero, then you have a term that looks like that. Now let's see if you can draw this. And since Andrew is standing there, he's gonna contribute. Right? Yes. Okay. So I was just wondering, is this necessary to have this relationship? But I guess up to here, there was an assumption made, right? This is pretty general. Is that correct? Did you make any assumption? I mean, you just started from those integrals.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No assumptions still there.
Yes. This part is fine. The only thing that the
problem is introducing the continuity equation, which is a problem because that's the same as the entropy equation. It should be equal entropy on the right side. So there's probably some other way to do that in the derivation.
Yeah, there must be. So let's see. So so we want to calculate the rho plus p minus n mu. N mu, right? Yeah. A cubed divided by. Okay. And we want to show that this is the same as something that we had up there. Mu over T times Dn. Right. So of course, there is one term which is just a differentiation of dt. Times rho plus p minus n mu n cubed. Okay. Then and then there is and then we want to use this relationship. Hopefully this is going to be enough. Then you're going to have, I guess, d of rho minus n mu a cubed divided by t. And then you have a d phi by dt times a cubed. So you have a cubed divided by t times d phi by dt. Where are we going to substitute from there? One over d rho plus p plus nt d by dt of mu divided by. Now, is this and I guess we have there was a DT somewhere. Yeah, there was a DT somewhere. Is there a DT somewhere? Yeah, there's a DT here. Yeah. Okay, good. I think that's starting to look better. So these cancel with this. Right. Is this looks good.
One brightest spot. Other things should start canceling, hopefully. Let's see. I suspect so that we have n mu a cubed here, and we have d mu here, and we have d t here times n mu. So I think these three terms should give us something interesting. And then there is d rho a cubed divided by t. So that's curious. So that's this is this term, but and then you have these n mu terms. Minus n mu a cubed dt divided by t squared. Plus you have then minus d n mu a cubed divided by t, and then you have this guy plus a cubed n e of mu by divided by t. Okay. So these last three terms, can we combine them somehow? This is a bit curious. This rho, there is no way to get rid of this. I don't see any way to get rid of this.
So. Do we want to get rid of this? Shouldn't that one stay in the final equation?
Hmm?
Don't we want that to show up in the final equation?
Well, we have n a cubed, not rho a cubed.
Well, no, we get the rho a cubed gives the energy.
That's true. That's true. Okay. So we're gonna keep that for this there, not too much about it. So these three terms, there is the I can separate this into three terms. Is d n, d mu, and d a cubed?
Well, no, you just need to leave the d n a cubed, which becomes d big n, because number density times a cubed is like big n, or total number.
Like what?
Well, number density times a cubed is number,
it's
roughly,
number.
Once we adjust a cubed to volume.
Okay, so we're going to keep that. So this is going to be the same thing, n minus n mu a cubed. Divided by t squared. Here we're going to have dna cubed times mu divided by t. And then there is another term which is d mu, which is dna cubed d mu divided by t. These are minus.
Well, d mu is just zero, isn't it?
Is it?
In chemical potential is a constant. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessary. I mean, the only thing we know could be a constant is a number, actually. I don't think chemical potential is a constant.
So those two terms cancel.
Plus this last one. Thank you.
Well, part of the last one.
Yeah, part of the last one. And another part, which is dt, that doesn't cancel. I hope it cancels with this one. But it doesn't quite. Because there's a minus, both are minus signs.
Oh, right.
That's weird. What is it? Are they supposed to cancel? Ah, no. Yes, this is a plus, right? Because it's minus and there's minus. Okay, good. So perfect. So this term and this term and this term cancel. Perfect. In life, great.
like we still have this there, which is Ant and this other guy.
Yeah.
Well, it's very ugly.
Well, not really. But they're what we need in the final equation. If you multiply through by t, we get tds equals dE minus mu dn. We're just missing the first
part. We're missing it. Okay, if you want to do that. Okay, so the first thing I wanted to do is to derive what the book says, which is this equation. And there's another bracket here. So that we haven't quite succeeded, right? Because if you define S as the book does, PSAQ, what we calculate is just P rho A Q by D divided by T minus mu D N A Q. Divided by 3. So it's close, but not close enough. So then it makes me doubt this. Was there an assumption here about something? So you assume mu is constant, I guess, right? Did you assume something else was constant as well? Right.
I assumed NA cubed was constant.
Here you assume NA cubed was constant?
Yeah.
How?
Well, it was part of the justification there is that either the NA cubed is constant or mu's much less than T. Which, in any case, much less than t means.
But in this equation.
Oh.
In derivatives.
Well, yeah, in derivatives.
You just assume mu was constant, I guess, right? You change t and c and. Is that right? So do you guys agree with this? Do you have the same thing? Right? Okay. So then I don't know why this doesn't work out. I think there must be something funny about this. Must be something funny about this. Right. So dp by dt is just rho plus p divided by t. Okay. Can we reproduce that? It's reasonable, I think. So, did you guys have the same equation?
Yeah.
Is this in the book?
It's in the book.
Okay. Okay, so then I don't know what's missing here. Okay, my only guess is that there might be a typo somewhere in this, and I'm not sure. But this is the first step, is to just show that DSA cubed is just, I don't know, there is a minus sign, I suppose, that we don't quite agree on, and then this takes that time. So maybe that there is a typo that we cannot get that. But this I have to derive. But then why this is entropy? This is basically the same argument that this is my five. So it's entropy if mu vanishes. If mu doesn't vanish, then you do expect another time that looks like this. So actually, this term is just like this other term that we have, right? And this is just the energy. But for some reason, they don't have a PDV term, which makes me think there must be a type or something like that. But maybe because we assume that the volume is constant here, would it be that there was an assumption of constant volume here somehow? But I guess not. I mean, none of these explicitly depend on volume.
In that condition, why don't we have dP in light?
This was dP. Right? This was A cubed divided by T times dP. Where did I use this to substitute for? Right? Okay. So, I suspect that we don't really need to use this to derive relationship to derive this SA cubed. And there is some other, I think some hidden assumption here, which I'm not sure. So let me think about this. So we have in the next 20 minutes, let's see if we can finish this problem. So I guess Fabio, you're the only one who continued the rest of this.
It asks to find rho, n, and s for two cases. First of all, the relativistic case. And we also assume that mu is smaller than t. And then the non-relativistic case. We saw that rho was the integral of e. Case T is bigger than M and T is bigger than U.
Do you mean U is bigger than M?
M is much smaller than T.
I'm just thinking if you convert T to energy, is that an implicit unit conversion there?
Converting temperature to energy?
Yeah.
But energy is integrated over, so it can be any number. But temperature is a parameter.
So what is your question?
Well, I'm just wondering how we can justify T much greater than M, as at first the units don't go together at all.
Oh, okay. So I guess that's one is KT, the other is MCS squared, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I guess C and H, C and K and H bar, all of these are one. Yes.
There should be a mu squared over there or something.
What?
In the definition for density.
No, I think that's...
So this is 3.5.
Oh.
So we had...
That's pressure. I don't think you get this. You look at like Brian's equations over there. And it don't match.
Energy density. Oh. Yeah, how about that?
Yes, I guess I've made, yes, I made a mistake. This is, the half, D square, D. Okay. So, in case M is not smaller than T, this becomes, and this integral is equal to
okay. So that's just an integral and all of it. Good.
Yes. And we know that in the highly relativistic case, P, which is the pressure, is approximately rho third. Which, in case we just and so the problem hasn't asked for P, it's asked for S. S is approximately rho plus P over T. And we have neglected again the chemical potential.
Yeah.
It's just by assumption there.
Yes. This will be 2 pi squared. Q is the same as G. And the same thing about N. Is that instead of E cubed, we have E squared. Which is a more complicated integral, and it gives us gives the answer in terms of the zeta functions. Okay, and one last thing, the average energy can be defined as rho over n, and this
is that also what you're supposed to count with or no?
No. So we should now go to the non-relativistic case. Now in the non-relativistic case, M is much bigger than T. So, let's start by N. N was G pi now, M is big and T is small. So let me see what I did. Well, I just wrote it again as a function of P.
Yes, squared minus n. Well, I mean, the number density is just p squared dp. Right?
Yes.
That seems like it's what you found there eventually. Yeah, but that's P squared dp.
Yeah, so
approximately equal to. I'm trying to remember what I did.
So you ignore that one, right? And the reason you're doing that is you assume mu is much larger than t. Right? Or m minus mu is much larger. So you know, so there's a difference between degenerate and non-degenerate, yeah. So
if t is small, this is the right thing to do, because this exponential would be very big.
Yeah, and it's not obvious, it's not an obvious thing. It should be a small with respect to m minus mu. So your energy is...
Did you say m is big, right? So m square root is pi squared minus m square.
So... this would be small.
Can be
so it's a tricky thing. So it's not just the condition on temperature. It's the condition on mu, really. So it's really temperature. It's just that combination. Temperature should be much smaller than m minus mu, I believe. Is that true? But you want this combination. You want the larger part one. So you want energy minus mu divided by T to be much larger. Which is basically saying that essentially temperature plus mass minus mu divided by temperature. Because energy is roughly temperature plus mass. Because you have rest mass plus thermal energy, which is of order temperature. So it turns out that you cannot just say this depends on the density, but it's one set mu. So if your density is very large, then you can have, then this doesn't necessarily hold. If density is low enough, then this holds. And you can see that because if that exponential becomes very big, that means the density is small. So this is the degeneracy, the difference between degenerate and non-degenerate gas. If that's a plus one. If the minus one, it doesn't have a particular name, but it's the question is, do you have many, many particles per phase space, or a few per phase space volume, or few particles, less than one particle per phase space volume. So if you have classical systems, usually this this degeneracy is not important in quantum mechanical effect. So that one is negligible. So this is the Boltzmann distribution, Maxwell Boltzmann distribution. So at low temperatures, then this breaks down. It can fix everything else, but low temperature, this breaks down.
Yes,
yeah.
If we add another energy term here, for example, if we want to see what rho is, we'll have the same thing, would be approximately n, but we will have an energy term, we'll have an n factor here. So rho will be approximately nm, and we could predict this because in the non-relativistic way, the density would be just the number density multiplied by mass.
By this part, yeah.
And the same thing for pressure. The pressure would be n, but this time we have e squared. to write T here, it's approximately MT. So the next thing it asks is to relate time and temperature, and to see what temperature corresponds to
actually,
what time.
That's not approximate. I mean, that's a perfect guess law, right? So in the non-relativistic limit, that's always valid.
Yes. Yes, it's a limit. So
yeah. Okay. So you're right. That's the thing. That's the condition. So. If k squared okay, yeah, but that I think that's supposed to hold for relativistic gases as well. I think that should be correct. As long as you don't have degeneracy, that one is negligible.
This last relation, this
yeah.
one just
If you just ignore that one, you can generate sort of
mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
So,
So I guess we can just do this. Can you show this relationship between time and temperature?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can just do that and we can break for lunch.
For dark matter.
Usually if you start with particles that you have the same number of particles, but in the early universe, when temperatures are large, mu is always zero. Okay, so. Because you can create particles and analyze them, so there is no constraint on the number of particles. That means mu is zero. So because the only reason, and we haven't gone through the derivation of this the Fermi Dirac distribution or Wolf-Lippmann distributions, but the thing that leads to the presence of mu is a requirement that number of particles doesn't change. So in the universe, mu is always zero. Then the question is, does anything happen that causes mu to be non-zero? And if your number of particles and antiparticles are the same, if nothing breaks the symmetry with the number of particles and antiparticles, then mu always remains zero. So for example, if dark matter is made of some particle which has the same number as its own antiparticle, then mu is always zero and remains zero. Like for example, for neutrinos, mu is zero. Or for photons today, mu is zero. So if you have some process that produces one sort of particle, say breaks if you mentioned that it produces more particles than antiparticles, that kind of process usually can give you a mu, which is not zero. So you have to see what is that process.
Yeah. So when mu is zero for every universe, you have the distinction between particles and antiparticles.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it
new?
Or is it zero for the universe?
Well, for dark matter we don't know, but then for example for baryons it's not zero because because we have more baryons than anti-baryons. That difference is not set by thermodynamics because if it was up to thermodynamics, there would be the same number as baryons and anti-baryons, same electron and others from that. So since that difference is constant, that means mu for baryons is not zero. That means their number density is conserved. That's why that's what you can use. You can use that equation, for example, to find what mu is. If you know the number, you plug in that equation, the Maxwell Boltzmann, and find mu. So it's basically the idea. Another way of putting this is that if the number of particles is conserved, then that number of particles gives you what mu is. If the number of particles isn't conserved, then it only depends on temperature.
But if you assume the decay of dark matter,
Yeah, but if it's not in thermal equilibrium, which decay process does never are, then that doesn't, that is still a mu. It's but this, the game is more complicated because it's not in thermal equilibrium. Yeah. Okay, so sorry, Harvard, we got distracted. So this is the radiation era, so that's Friedmann equation, relation between A and T, perfect. From a statistical physics, but that's what you just draw, what you just derived, sorry. That's all you need, right? Where is that plank? Oh, that's one. Okay. So when the temperature of the universe was 1 MeV, it was 1 second old. Good. That's interesting. And at larger temperatures, it was even younger. So can you tell how old the universe was when hydrogen recombination happened? So the universe became neutral? When does the universe become neutral? What is the ionization? But it's, how do you calculate? So we want hydrogen to become neutral. So what is the ionization energy of hydrogen? 13 eV. Okay, so if you plug that in there, what does it give? 13 eV. So let's say 10 eV. And it's MeV, so it's 10 to the 5, 10 to the 10 seconds. To 10 seconds, how many years? I think that's 1,000 years or something. That's 1,000 years. Yeah, so now there is a catch here in this calculation. It turns out that a universe doesn't become neutral just when its temperature falls below 13 electron volt, because even though the temperature of photons that ionize hydrogen are becomes lower than ionization temperature, there are so many of them that they can keep the universe ionized up to lower temperature. So the universe actually becomes the universe becomes neutral at temperature of an eV rather than a 13 electron volt. So that says that this happens around 100,000 years, which is, I think, about why.
So is it like strict limit?
You have to solve so what is the equation that you have to solve? It's called Saha equation. So there is a thermodynamic equilibrium between the photons and hydrogen. So I guess it's not in any of the, it should be an equation that's here already. So it comes from the fact that so you have neutral hydrogen, say X1, and you have electrons. So it's proton plus electron gives you neutral hydrogen, right? So and This actually implies that mu of proton plus mu of electron is the same as mu of neutral hydrogen. And this is something that you can show in thermodynamics, that if there's a process like that, this is in thermal equilibrium. So that we haven't discussed the conversion of different species to each other. But if there is a process which is in thermal equilibrium, then the sum of mu's on the two sides should be the same. And that's something I don't remember is derivation. But using that and plugging that into the relation, these relations that we have, that gives us exactly when it happens. And it turns out that, sorry, and there's a photo of the actual. And it turns out that if you just plug those in, it turns out that since there are too many gammas, there are like 10 to 10 times more photons than there are electrons. Then the temperature of recombination comes out of that. And that's an interesting derivation. Maybe we do it for another problem, for another week. But it basically comes from all this formula that we have here, plus that conservation of chemical potential. Okay, thank you. So we see how much we can get done next hour. Thanks a lot for all you guys.